from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Judy Campbell, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, the U.S. Supreme Court has cleared the way for same-sex marriage in California. Celebrations have already begun at San Francisco's City Hall. The court dismissed the appeal brought by supporters of Proposition 8, which bans same-sex marriage, ruling they did not have standing to bring their case. The court also struck down a key provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act as unconstitutional. We'll discuss what the cases mean for the state and the nation. From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, in today for Michael Krasny. The U.S. Supreme Court has cleared the way for same-sex couples to get married in California. In its decision released this morning, the court dismissed an appeal by sponsors of Proposition 8, the voter-approved ban on same-sex marriage, saying they did not have the legal standing to appeal the case. The court also declared unconstitutional a central provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which denied federal benefits to some same-sex couples. The court did not take up the issue of whether gay marriage is constitutional. To discuss these legal issues, to start us off, our Professor David Levine, law professor with UC Hastings. Welcome.
Good morning, Judy.
And law professor Jane Schachter from Stanford Law School. She's a national expert on constitutional law and sexual orientation law.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining. Good morning. Well, we have just gotten news. The breaking news right now is that Governor Jerry Brown has just ordered the counties to start issuing marriage licenses. So things are moving quickly in California. Is that, you're shaking your head here, David Levine, is that too soon?
It's a few days too soon because the mandate isn't going to issue. I think it's for 25 days. And Prop 8, the operation of Prop 8 has been going pending the resolution of the full appeal. So he's jumping the gun a little bit. Certainly would take a few days to implement and be prepared. But obviously, he's excited, as are people all over the state.
Well, it does get to Jerry Brown's enthusiasm, which gets to the heart of this case, which is that the reason this case was dismissed is because the governor, the state, did not defend Prop 8 in court. So explain what happened.
Right. The holding in the Prop 8 case is a narrow technical holding that normally you would not be interested in all unless you were in law school, which is whether or not the proponents of Proposition 8 had standing, which means the enough stake in the outcome is what we say. Do they have skin in the game sufficient to bring a federal appeal? Now, in this case, there was no question because of the structure of the case that at the trial court level, it was entirely proper for Judge Walker to go ahead and to hold his trial. But at that point, when it came time for an appeal, the state of California declined to appeal. And it was the proponents of Prop 8 that appealed, and that immediately became an issue at the Ninth Circuit. And then the Ninth Circuit tried to get some help from the California Supreme Court. But ultimately, what Chief Justice Roberts said was that that was not enough, that for federal standing, the proponents of Prop 8 simply did not have what's required. And so for that reason alone, the case falls. And then what that means is that Judge Walker's opinion will remain the law for this case. Now, the implications of it are something we'll need to go into.
So, right. And Jane Schachter, why don't you talk about what happens next here? I mean, we just heard the news about Governor Brown.
Yeah.
Where are we? Fill us in on what happens.
It's a great question. And there are going to be a lot of chess moves over the next few days and weeks that will tell us and clarify the scope of today's historic ruling. I think there's no question that history has been made, both in the striking down of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act and in something that looks very much like a green light for same-sex couples to start marrying again in California. Here's the hitch. Judge Walker's ruling, which is reinstated by the effect of what the Supreme Court did, unquestionably directed the governor of the state to stop enforcing Prop 8. And that's what Jerry Brown said today, and his was the next important move to watch for. what he would do. He will not enforce Prop 8, therefore clerks should start giving licenses as soon as possible. The question is, does Judge Walker's opinion, which was not a was issued not in a class action, but in a lawsuit involving two couples, does it bind and apply statewide to other couples who are not part of the litigation? I think the governor will aggressively take the position that the state was a party in the case. The state is not contesting the decision of Judge Walker, therefore Prop 8 is no longer enforceable. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's further litigation on this. It might be that the proponents of Prop 8 will try to get some clarification about the scope of Judge Walker's opinion, and that won't come from Judge Walker because he's retired, but it will come from a different district judge. More likely, I think, because Governor Brown has ordered that marriage licenses be issued immediately, once that starts happening, assuming that starts happening, and I don't see a constraint to it because there was a stay in place pending resolution of the Supreme Court's appeal, and I think that in short order, that will be dissolved by effect of today's ruling.
Right, and that's a good time, too. I actually have just gotten the language on this, so we'll make sure we have this correct. This is what Governor Brown said. I've directed the California Department of Public Health to advise the state's counties that they must begin issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples in California as soon as the Ninth Circuit confirms that the stay is lifted.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and I think that will happen quickly. I don't know if it will happen today, but it will happen relatively quickly. What I think will happen at that point, it would not surprise me if in some more culturally conservative part of the state, a clerk of a local county clerk says, well, I don't think the governor had the power to order me to do this. I don't think that I'm bound by Judge Walker's order, and therefore I'm not going to give you a license. At that point, same-sex couple may go to court to try to get that license, and we may be off to the races with further litigation. Now, this really is a law professor's dream, more of like what David was talking about a minute ago. Will that be in state court? Will that be in federal court? Will it be about the scope of Walker's decision? Will it be about the scope of the governor's authority to decide what to do under these circumstances? Any number of questions. But I think there's no question that a lot of same-sex couples in short order are going to start marrying again in California.
Right. And we have seen in the past, we have seen county clerks that have balked at this, right? I mean,
absolutely. Imperial County tried to become the party withstanding to pursue an appeal from Judge Walker's opinion. And they were found not to be a proper party and could not do that. And so the effect of all of that is that the only party left to try to take the appeal were the ballot sponsors, a group of private citizens who I'm certain believe very deeply in their cause. But what the court says is that really doesn't distinguish them from other citizens out there who may believe very passionately and deeply in their reading of the Constitution and in their views of particular pieces of legislation, but they don't get to go to court unless they have that particularized kind of injury that David was talking about, that skin in the game that he mentioned.
Well, what is this? I mean, this is a big blow to the initiative process, or at least this initiative. I mean, I think supporters of this would say, look, the people voted this in, and if the state's not going to back us up, I mean, what does that mean?
I would say two things about that. I think that's a great question. From the outset, there was a real puzzle here about this standing question, because you had two odd results, one of which would flow from whatever was decided. The first odd result is the one that you're talking about today, which is that can it be the case that elected officials, who are the ones who the people were trying to circumvent by using direct democracy, have the power basically to kill an initiative by declining to defend it in state court? That doesn't sound right. But on the other hand, there was a question, can it be the case that those persons who are elected to make decisions about litigation for the state, the governor and the attorney general, the only ones who are accountable to voters, who have an actual duty to make these decisions, don't get to make the decisions, and private citizens who ordinarily can't come into court get to do that. That doesn't sound right either. I think there is a middle way, and this may be what evolves in the future. There was an initiative on the ballot, I believe it was the same year as Prop 8, and it put specific language in the initiative appointing the sponsors of the measure to defend it in state court if state officials declined to do so.
That's
that
in state court.
That was about redistricting. And so there was a good reason to think, gee, the elected officials aren't going to like this redistricting. So I think in the future, that may be the differentiating factor that will prevent elected officials from gutting the initiative process through non-defense.
So that would just be standard language. David Levine.
Judy, I was just going to come in and just to say that part of the difference here is that, of course, the California Supreme Court gave a ringing endorsement to the use of these proponents as a backstop when there is a default. And so Jane is quite right that on the state side, state court side, there's no question that these proponents can come in the event of a default in another case. Now, that position got 4 votes today. Justice Kennedy got Justice Sotomayor and Justice Alito and Justice Thomas to agree with that. And it's quite a strong opinion explaining why that's appropriate. But of course, it was only 4 votes. So we have this split between the state side and the federal side. But it's quite clear that at least on the state side, when we have a default again on the part of the elected officials, a proposition can be defended in that forum.
Okay. Any surprises when you're looking at the justices and how they voted in this decision? I mean, you had on Proposition 8, you had Scalia was in the majority, and Justice Sotomayor was in the minority.
Right. We don't have full explanation for that, but it seems as if what Justice Scalia was doing in joining the majority opinion is that he was taking the traditional conservative approach to standing, which is to say that it's hard to achieve it, and that to say that the proponents did not have standing under federal law is utterly consistent with what Justice Scalia has done in the past. It is the other conservative justices who maybe were inconsistent on that. And then when we're looking at Justice Sotomayor, why did she join Justice Kennedy's opinion? Well, because Justice Kennedy makes a good argument, a very good argument, as to why the proponents should be treated as having standing, number one. And while Justice Sotomayor doesn't explain this, presumably she would like to have gotten standing so that you could get to the merits and that she presumably would have been a vote to strike down Prop 8. I'll bet you Justice Thomas and Justice Alito were not there, and I'll bet you Justice Scalia was not there as well.
Okay, well, there's a lot to talk about with this case, and we'll continue to analyze this case. And we have yet to talk about the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, also an enormous decision that the court found a key provision of that unconstitutional, which denies some benefits to same-sex couples. But we'd like to hear from you. Do you have any questions about what these decisions mean or what they mean for you? If you've considered same-sex marriage, you can join the discussion. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments or questions to forum@kqed.org. And now we're going to check in. There are hundreds of people gathered outside of City Hall this morning in San Francisco in anticipation of the ruling. San Francisco, former San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, the one who helped initiate same-sex marriage when he directed the county to initiate to issue licenses to same-sex couples in 2004, was there this morning, and he had this to say.
And I think every single one of you understand a core principle that defines our values in this city, in this state, and for that matter, at our best, this nation, and that is we don't just tolerate diversity, we celebrate our diversity each and every day.
And reporter and host of KQED's California Report is joining us now at City Hall. Hi, Scott Schaefer.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. Well, tell us what the scene's like there in San Francisco. Are people pretty excited?
Well, I'm standing in front of City Hall, and there are a lot of people have gone, but there are still dozens, probably, 5,500 people left in front. Lieutenant Governor Newsom is here doing interviews along with other city and state officials. And so, there are people lingering and sort of celebrating. I think it's sort of a combination of excitement, relief, and a little bit of disappointment, to be honest with you. Excitement, of course, that Prop 8 has been struck down, relief that it wasn't upheld, but a little bit of disappointment that it was shot down on standing, a legal technicality, essentially, rather than getting to the merits.
Was there any expectation that the court was going to judge on the constitutionality, or just a hope?
Well, I would say there was, you know, if you go back to when this lawsuit was filed in 2009, that was the basis for the lawsuit, that there's a fundamental right to marriage. Now, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals narrowed that ruling of Judge Walker considerably, but, you know, there were some people, including the attorneys for the four plaintiffs, that were hoping for a broader decision. But, you know, on the other hand, this ruling, once same-sex marriage is legal, increases by half the number of Americans living in states where gay marriage is legal. It'll now be, when you add it to the other 12 or so states in the District of Columbia, about 100 million people living in states where same-sex marriage is legal. So it's a big deal.
And what is the city doing there to prepare? I imagine they have a lot to do with probably a lot of marriages coming.
Well, San Francisco, unlike other counties, is chomping at the bit to begin this. They've already sworn in several deputies who can do the ceremonies once the marriage licenses are issued. We expect that to be sometime in mid to late July. When marriage was legal, same-sex marriage was legal back in 2008, the forms, the marriage license forms, were changed from man and wife or husband and wife to, you know, person one and person two. So the forms are there. The forms are ready to go. That sort of administrative task has been done. Governor Brown today has issued an order to the counties telling them to begin issuing marriage licenses once the stay on the decision is lifted by the Ninth Circuit. So, you know, I think the question will become, what litigation follows? Are there some counties, Imperial County, Kern County, Siskiyou County, that may resist and may say, may agree with the attorneys for the plaintiffs that this, not for the plaintiffs, but for the proponents of Prop 8, that this ruling today really only applies to the four couples, the two couples, rather, the four plaintiffs. And so there may be some skirmishes in court over that before this is done.
And finally, Scott, it is Gay Pride Weekend this weekend. What are we expecting to see?
That explains all these flags over
here
at City Hall. Well, it's, you know, Gay Pride is always a huge celebration in San Francisco, and I've talked to people who've come in from out of town and just happened to be here when this ruling came down. But it'll certainly add an element of excitement and celebration, the town will painted red, I guess, you know, or pink, maybe.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. That's Scott Schaefer, reporter and host of KQED's California Report. Scott did mention again that issue of counties and who this would apply to. I think there was also a question about whether this would apply more broadly. Is there a question about whether other states within the Ninth Circuit could possibly fall under this decision?
Clearly does not. Certainly, in terms of gaming out the different scenarios, there was a scenario under which all the states in the Ninth Circuit would have to change. But the way it came down today, no, there's no question at all, wherever those particular states are. So, for example, the state of Washington has voted for same-sex marriage, no change there. State of Arizona, they don't have same-sex marriage, no change there.
Well, on to the Defense of Marriage Act, also a big decision. Jane Schachter, can you explain what happened there? This provision was ruled unconstitutional under the Fifth Amendment. Is that right?
Yes, it was. And this one, the first thing to note is that the court had a version of the same out they could take. There was an argument being made that there was nobody with proper authority to be in court, to have standing to press this appeal.
Because the Obama administration
supports.
Exactly,
because the Obama administration, the Brown administration, the Schwarzenegger administration, all of these elected officials take the position that these laws denying marriage equality are unconstitutional. But the court did not take that route. There are a number of justices in the dissent who would have taken that route, but by a 5-4 majority, Justice Kennedy writing the opinion, they got to the merits of the case. And basically, Kennedy brought together two ideas or two constitutional principles, and based on their combination, he found Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act, which says that for the over 1,000 programs That the federal government has Social Security benefits, tax benefits, veterans benefits, immigration, all kinds of things, where the Defense of Marriage Act had said marriage means one man and one woman, no matter what a state might say. Now, we now have 12 states that that have legalized same-sex marriage. So in those 12 states, someone can get married in New York, in the state of Washington, Maryland, other states, but not be married for purposes of the federal government. And that is an anomalous thing because the federal government has traditionally gone along with state definitions of marriage. So what the court said today is it violates ideas of equality and equal liberty, and it demeans the dignity of those couples who are married under state law not to have their marriages recognized. The second principle is that Justice Kennedy bristled at the idea of the federal government getting overly enmeshed in the definition of marriage. Traditionally, family law, the law of marriage, custody, divorce, etc., have been in the domains of the states. And so he said that this was improper for the federal government to inject itself to this degree. So you put those things together. There's a federalism problem, and there's some very ringing language in here where Justice Kennedy mm-hmm. channels his own opinion, issued exactly 10 years ago in the Lawrence case, striking down state laws banning sodomy. He uses very similar language here. We ought to respect, not demean, honor the dignity of couples who are married under state law.
Right, and he was saying DOMA's principal effect is to identify a subset of state-sanctioned marriages and make them unequal, which seems like fairly strong language. Is there more we can read into this decision with this sort of language, David Levine?
Sure. I think we can read in a couple things. One is it occurred to me that if you look at Justice Kennedy's ringing language in the Windsor case, which is the Defense of Marriage case, and you look at where he came out on the standing issue in the Prop 8 case, which is he would have found standing, you know, there probably were five votes in the Supreme Court to find affirmatively same-sex marriage has to occur everywhere. Because if you add Kennedy and Sotomayor to the other liberals, they might have had five votes. But here's the difference, is that in the Defense of Marriage Act case, the Solicitor General agreed to stay in as a formal party, and that made all the difference for standing. In the Prop 8 case, the Attorney General of California and the governor refused to participate at all, and the case fell on standing. But it occurs to me that given what Kennedy said, we could be sitting here saying something very, very different had the Attorney General of California and the governor chosen to take the same route as the Solicitor General of the United States.
Briefly, Jane Schechter, your sense of that, we are coming right up on a break, but is this time for some other state to come forward?
Justice Kennedy's papers are released years after he's off the court. I am not so sure of that, because the federalism part, the states' rights part of the DOMA decision, might suggest that Justice Kennedy wanted to leave this matter to the states for now, that he was, and he's very particular in his language, saying that the problem with DOMA is it doesn't respect the dignity of couples who are already married under state law. And he says at the end of the opinion, those are the only ones I'm talking about.
Okay.
Still, I think the principle of respect should apply to couples who seek to get married under state law as well. So,
okay.
I think it's a good question.
And we will continue this shortly. We're going to have a short break, and we'll continue our conversation on this morning's landmark Supreme Court decisions on same-sex marriage. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, and today for Michael Krasny, we're discussing this morning's Supreme Court rulings clearing the way for same-sex marriages in California and striking down a key provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. We are going to your calls in just a second, but first, David Levine. I'm joined by David Levine, law professor at UC Hastings, and Jane Schechter, law professor at Stanford Law School. We'll hear from more of you in a minute. David Levine, there is another provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act that applies here. And that has to do with, that did not get struck down, and that has to do with states recognizing marriages.
Right. Part of the Defense of Marriage Act was was directed to the federal government, but another very important part told states they did not have to recognize same-sex marriages from other states. Now, that was not an issue in the Windsor case, but that is certainly going to start coming up. So let's say somebody wants to take their new same-sex marriage from California, and they have to move to a state which does not recognize same-sex marriage, and they want to get benefits in that place. They want to adopt a kid. There's medical benefits, whatever it may be. There's going to be a question as to whether that marriage should be recognized. And Justice Kennedy's opinion will help us, but it doesn't decide it entirely. So that's a whole other realm of litigation.
So that's decided in the courts?
It will be, but not for a while.
Okay. Lulu from Oakland, please join.
Thanks. My partner and I cried this morning on watching the DOMA news roll in. We just felt so humanized by this. And my question is, for those of us who are in gay partnerships and we do want to get married, in plain English, do the experts think we need to go out and get married immediately as soon as we can at the end of July for fear that things will get overturned again?
There were moments.
Can we take our time and plan a really big blowout?
Okay, Jane Schachter.
Based on what happened with Prop 8, as you may recall, the couples who were married after the California Supreme Court ruled, but before Prop 8 was passed, those marriages stayed intact even after Prop 8, came into being. So, you know, if I were giving you advice, I would say go get married at the clerk's office quickly, then plan your big blowout. Be on the safest side possible.
David Levine, different advice?
That works for me. I think doing it two parts is just fine, but I have no problem with you auditioning orchestras. Find the prettiest place you can. I think it's quite safe to go ahead. But Jane's advice is if you want belt and suspenders, she's right. At the end of July, go on over to the Alameda County Courthouse and have a quick service.
Sounds good.
Thanks. Thanks for your call, Lulu. Kate Kendall is now joining us. She's executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Kate Kendall.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining.
It's great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, give me your reaction. What's your reaction to today's decision?
You know, it's in some ways it's kind of hard to take it in. I mean, this has been this whole fight, Prop 8, you know, the whole fight with Prop 8 began in 2004 with Mayor Newsom issuing marriage licenses. That got shut down. We filed the lawsuit challenging marriage discrimination in California, won that in 2008, and then, of course, that led to Prop 8, and that was ratified by the voters, and now Prop 8 is gone and dustbin of history. 9 years. And then to have DOMA in the middle of that as well, you know, pervading our lives. These are two deeply, deeply stigmatizing laws that send the message to LGBT people and to same-sex couples that there is something less valuable, something threatening, something to be feared in your relationships. And for the government to withdraw from the field of discrimination, that really provides no support for private biases or prejudices. While we can't control those and people will think whatever they want about gay people, they won't be able to use the government's discrimination to support their own prejudices. And it will, I think, trigger people to think differently about gay people. It's an amazing day. I mean, clearly we're not done. There's a lot more work to do. There's a huge swath of the country where people don't have any sorts of protections. But to have Prop 8 gone, to win marriage back in California, to have the federal government recognizing marriages, I'll tell you, it's an amazing moment.
Well, we talked to Scott Schaefer, who was at City Hall earlier, and he mentioned that some people were a little disappointed that they were happy about the decision, but they would have liked to see a broader ruling on Prop 8.
We deserve that. I mean, it really is time for the court, you know, to look at this patchwork of laws around the country, so many laws that stigmatize couples and refuse to recognize their marriages. All those laws should be struck down. They are all they all violate the most sacred principles that we value under the Constitution of equality and fairness and dignity for all people. And that is a definitely glass half-empty part of these rulings today. The court should have done that. I think that's inevitable. There is no doubt we're on that march, and that's what we still have to push for.
And law professor David Levine, sitting here with me, earlier speculated that, judging from what Kennedy wrote, that maybe gay marriage would have fared well if it was being judged on the constitutionality. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think Professor Levine has a real point there. I think there's a fair amount in Kennedy's ruling that provides a bit of a roadmap around, you know, how he talks about DOMA and how stigmatizing DOMA is. Well, these marriage bans in these states are stigmatizing in exactly the same way. But Kennedy is the moderate swing vote that we need, and he has tremendous fidelity for states having their own power to make their own laws and regulations. Clearly, the federal DOMA law offended him, and that's why it struck down. But I think what he's definitely signaling and what this DOMA ruling portends is the beginning of the end of laws that, where no matter what state you're in, that discriminate based on your sexual orientation or your gender in whether the state's going to recognize your marriage or not. And, you know, we have a few more years, but I think the horizon has gone from being a 15 to 20 year horizon only maybe just a few years ago to, you know, a 5 to 10 year horizon.
Okay. And finally, just briefly, what's next for you? Where do you see the next legal battle?
What we've got to do. Look, we live in a country now where there are people who live in 37 states where they don't have their relationships protected, and a smaller number of states, but still very significant, where there's no protection at all for LGBT people. We can't have this have and have not situation. We have to make sure we don't leave anyone behind as we find ourselves in a greater situation where we feel dignity and we're free from stigma. We have to make sure everyone feels that.
Kate Kendall is Executive Director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Thanks so much for joining us.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Stuart in Massachusetts, join us.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. So if myself and my same-sex spouse are legally married in Massachusetts and now federally recognized, when we move to a state that bans same-sex marriage, are we still married?
Excellent question. David Levine.
Well, yes and no. I mean, where the rubber meets the road is, let's say the two of you move down, where shall we say, Virginia, and you want to take advantage of some state benefits, or if something happened and one of you were ill and the one wanted to go into the hospital and make decisions on behalf of the person, that's where we would need to potentially it would have to be a lawsuit to work that out. But that's exactly where these uncertainties would come up. What are you going to do about your federal tax returns? You can file a joint tax return now in Massachusetts, or you will be able to very, very shortly. But you move down to Virginia, and can you continue to file a federal tax return? All those things need to be worked out. And as Kay Kendall was saying, those are the things that are going to have to be smoothed out in the coming years.
And we go to our caller, Colin, in San Francisco.
Good morning. I married my partner in October of 2008. At that time, he was not a U.S. citizen, and I was not able to sponsor him for a green card. We had friends of ours who heterosexual couples had married after us, and were able to obtain citizenship for the foreign spouse quicker than we were, and that was a very felt very hurtful for it to be discriminated against by my own government based on that. My question is, does the Windsor decision invalidate DOMA with respect to federal immigration? Same-sex American citizens in jurisdictions like New York and California now able to sponsor their foreign partners for citizenship?
Jane Schechter on
great question.
Foreign partners.
I think the answer at the end of the day will be yes. I think we have to let a few more steps play out until we know clearly. Here's what I mean. The Windsor case itself involved only the federal estate tax. But the language in the Windsor decision, not only, as Kate Kendall was talking about, does it repeatedly talk about, you know, respect and dignity, but it really relies on how sweeping DOMA is. So it is not the narrowest decision the court could have made, which is to say, we'll leave for another day immigration and other issues. We're just saying today that DOMA is unconstitutional as applied to the estate tax. So I think here the next move is for the Obama administration. And what I would expect, it's going to take them a little time, is that they are going to instruct agencies, including the immigration authorities, to stop enforcing DOMA. And that's what I would expect to see, that this is a sweeping enough decision in its characterization of DOMA that it is unconstitutional in all its application to different federal programs.
Now, there's been a lot said about nationwide that the trend is turning, that people want same-sex marriage. Now there's not the opposition that there once was. I wonder, Jane Schachter, do you think that we are continuing? Is the legal arena where we're going to continue to see these fights, or are these just going to be more initiatives? Are these going to be things that people are going to be deciding? Voters are going to
be deciding. I think we are going to see continued litigation, and I think the Windsor case and Justice Kennedy's opinion, even though it said it only applied to those already married under state law, will be citation number one in future lawsuits. But I think there's going to be a lot of political and legislative action. We've already seen those dominoes beginning to fall. The 2012 election was historic because proponents of marriage equality had lost every single ballot measure that concerned marriage only up until that election, and then it was a clean sweep of four victories in 2012. Since then, you've begun to see Republicans, three Republican senators came out against DOMA. There was an amicus brief filed by a number of prominent Republicans advocating marriage equality. Of course, Ted Olson's role in the Prop 8 case itself is early evidence of that. So it's beginning to have a little bit of bipartisanship to it. It's by no means fully bipartisan, but is moving in that direction. And as I think that happens, you're going to see more and more legislative action. What I think you'll see at the end of the day is the same states that held out against interracial marriage, and that was finally struck down in the Loving versus Virginia case in 1967, the same states that kept bans, criminal bans on same-sex sexual activity on their books, that was struck down. There were 13 of them in 2003. There's going to be a group of states that are not going to move on their own on this, and at some point there will be a Supreme Court decision that is a broad affirmation of marriage equality. But that may be some years off.
We have a question from Kennifer, who asks, what will happen to official domestic partnerships currently registered in the state? Will they be nullified?
In California. Presumably, it'll effectively change over to a marriage. When we had the interim period where, under the California Supreme Court, in effect, that's what was going to happen. So I think probably it'll automatically happen. But again, that's something that we're going to have to get some direction. The state officials in Sacramento will be issuing some directives to the appropriate county officials. So we'll see. But I think as a practical matter, it will turn into a marriage.
Oh, we have a question from Skip, who writes, what will be the mechanism by which the marriage clause is removed from the California Constitution, specifically Section 7.5? The only precedent I can think of was the 19th Amendment, which was overturned by the 21st Amendment. Will there be another popular referendum? Jane Schachter?
There might be. And I think in part that will depend upon what happens next. If there's a lot of litigation and there's a lot of uncertainty about the effect of Judge Walker's ruling, and there is a credible claim that someone could make that Prop 8 is still alive in some respects, and I think there will be a ballot measure. And my sense is a repeal of Prop 8 would pass at the ballot box, most likely based on polls. On the other hand, that may not be necessary. And there have been state constitutional amendments declared unconstitutional before under the state under the federal constitution. Romer versus Evans, another gay rights opinion written by Justice Kennedy, was such a decision, and the whatever is in the state constitution simply becomes unenforceable.
in effect, in the law books, there'll be an asterisk next to that proposition, that part of the California Constitution saying rendered unenforceable because, and there'll be a citation. So mechanically, I think that's what it'll look like.
Oh, we have an email from Allie who says, I am so thrilled about today's Supreme Court decision, though I'm a straight married mom, to know my 2-year-old son will always know an America where those who love each other regardless of sexual orientation can be married makes me ecstatic. This is a great day for equality. Sarah writes, I'd like some comment on the timing of the Supreme Court's announcement of cases this week. It occurs to me that there may have been some deliberate choice to announce today's decision on Prop 8 and DOMA following yesterday's decision on the Voting Rights Act. Predictably, the tidal wave of euphoric coverage today has swamped yesterday's negative coverage. I am thrilled that Prop 8 and DOMA were overturned, but it's hard to hear people praising the court after yesterday's blow to our democracy and our franchise. I just hope people don't forget what just happened 24 hours ago.
Well, supposedly the Supreme Court issues the opinions in the order in which they are ready. And we've had a flurry of opinions in the last 2 weeks. They've been working very, very long hours. And it's simply a matter of that sort of scheduling. Now, it may be that Chief Justice Roberts scheduled so that there were blockbusters Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. But I really don't think they were paying any attention to the fact that the news cycle was going to change today as compared to yesterday.
We're talking about today's landmark Supreme Court decisions on same-sex marriage, dismissing California's Proposition 8 and striking down parts of the Defense of Marriage Act. We're talking to law professor David Levine at UC Hastings and Jane Schachter, law professor at Stanford Law School. And you can join our conversation. You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Any questions about the ruling or if you just want to join the discussion, please do. We go now to Adrian in San Francisco.
Good morning. I'm so thrilled about this decision, and I'm just curious about the impact on California even more. I'm wondering, did the Prop 8 ruling mean that the governor had to direct the counties to issue same-sex marriage licenses, or is that only happening because we have a supportive governor here in California? And can you just say a little more about the impact?
David Levine?
Well, the governor was a party to the case, so it's a technical matter. He probably does have to issue a directive, but the county clerks are sufficiently independent that there's at least this theoretical possibility that a county clerk will say, no, we're not going to follow that directive. But the difference between Jerry Brown wanting to do it versus being forced to is such a small difference. It doesn't matter, at least here today.
And Jane Schachter, I wonder if you could also talk about practically what's going to happen now with DOMA struck down. I mean, these are what did we have back taxes? We have federal benefits. What are we seeing? Are we going to have a big rush to the Treasury now that same-sex couples are allowed?
Think this ruling will be applied prospectively, which means we're not going to go back over anyone's back taxes. I think for future tax years, though, starting next April 15th, I imagine it'll be clear by then that that the IRS is going to recognize same-sex marriages as fully as it recognizes opposite-sex marriages from this day forward. But you know, the breadth of DOMA means that the federal government and the Obama administration has a lot of work to do to implement this ruling. And it's going to take a little while to fully and comprehensively and speedily implement this because they're going to have to look at decisions that each agency has to make. I think some of the most high-profile decisions are going to be not only in the area of tax but immigration. That's a huge one for the reason that the caller pointed out earlier. There are people here who are married legally under the law of the state whose spouse would become a citizen, assuming it's a bona fide marriage, just as happens in the realm of heterosexual marriage, who have not been able to do that. And I think that is going to be at the forefront.
And that was not addressed today. That is not one of the federal benefits that is part
what's
of
that?
This. That was not addressed today.
That was
correct?
Not in the opinion. But if Section 3, as I believe, of DOMA is now unconstitutional in any respect, then there won't be any reason for the Obama administration, which I think is inclined to recognize same-sex marriages, not to do that in the context of immigration and beyond. So they're going to have to go agency by agency and issue some regulations and public directives explaining how same-sex couples can achieve recognition from the federal government in these different areas.
Now, is this a bureaucratic process, or is this likely to be a contentious process?
I think that this part will be more of a bureaucratic process.
Okay.
Because the Obama administration is in control of, you know, the federal government's apparatus, and they are sympathetic to this. So I think that, you know, the next step is going to be for them to issue these directives, and we'll go from there. It's different than in the realm of county clerks in California, where there might be some who are not supportive.
David Levine?
You know, one caveat to what you're saying, Jane, is remember that just a few weeks ago, there was a whole brouhaha with respect to the pending immigration reform bill when Senator Leahy tried to introduce the idea that same-sex couples ought to be recognized for immigration purposes, and he had to back away from that. There was such hostility to that in Congress. So I'm not sure that it's going to be such smooth sailing. I think by and large you're right, and certainly the Obama administration will be issuing those directives, but there's at least that uncertainty because of that pending bill. And the other one I wanted to go back to is see your tax advisor. If there's an issue with respect to estate tax, if there's an issue with respect to your federal income taxes in the last couple of years, at least see your tax advisor. Maybe you'll get something back. Jane's probably right that it's not retrospective.
An interesting point, which is, will there be a congressional response to this? And, you know, there's no question that there are going to be a lot of unhappy Republicans who are going to be unhappy to see DOMA go down. But given that, you know, we have divided government in terms of the two chambers being controlled by different parties, I don't think that they're going to be able to accomplish much in terms of reinstating parts of DOMA or anything like that. But surely he's correct that there's a huge difference between the Obama administration's position and what Congress would be able to do.
Let's bring into the discussion John Eastman, professor at Chapman University School of Law and also chair of the National Organization for Marriage, which supports Prop 8. John Eastman, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, and thanks for accommodating. I was on the courthouse steps doing some television interviews, and it's very hot out there.
I bet, and I'm so glad we can get you in before the end of the show. Please tell us your reaction to both of these decisions.
Well, obviously disappointed, but I want to focus on an issue that I think most people are overlooking, okay. And that the DOMA decision by the court, which specifically says that marriage policy is a core function of the states and that the federal government can't interfere with that, strongly suggest that Judge Walker's opinion in the Proposition 8 case, which is the last opinion standing in the Proposition 8 case right now, is invalid and has been superseded by that DOMA decision. Because what he did is strike down California's effort to have its own marriage policy as reflected in Proposition 8. So I think we've got a lot of litigation still to go on whether that decision has to be overruled. And if it's upheld, how broad its scope is. This was not a class action. So does it apply only to the individual two couples or only to those two counties? Remember, Imperial County tried to intervene to defend the statute and was told it couldn't do so because the ruling would not affect it. Well, that means that there are 56 other counties in the state that are still bound by Proposition 8.
So do you argue, do you think it only applies to the two couples?
Well, I think it's inconsistent with the Supreme Court's ruling today in the DOMA case, and I don't think it's valid at all. And I think a petition for rehearing of that decision would require the lower court to recognize that the Supreme Court has said marriage policy is set at the states, and that means California can have Proposition 8.
Your reaction to, I mean, this is an initiative that was passed by voters, your reaction to the dismissal of that?
Well, quite frankly, I'm just appalled by the actions of our elected officials in the state. The Attorney General, both the current one and the prior one, who's now governor, in refusing to defend an initiative that was adopted by 7 million Californians, as it was their legal obligation to do. And now for the Supreme Court to effectively ratify that by letting that gamesmanship, you know, be the governing principle in the case, I think it's an outrage. We do not have a ruling by the high court on the validity of Proposition 8. And, you know, and by default, people are going to argue that we have same-sex marriage in California, despite the express will of the people of California to the contrary.
Now, polls have showed that popular opinion has shifted and that Prop 8 would not pass now if it were on the ballot. Do you think this is I'd just like your reaction to that. Do you think this is an issue that has moved on?
I don't think so. You know, look, there's been a huge propaganda campaign to try and move those poll numbers, and it's had some success. But remember, the polls were showing that Proposition 8 would lose back in 2008, and it didn't. People tend to vote what they really believe when they get to the polls rather than what they tell a pollster. But even if it's true, the right remedy for that is not to have some default judgment issued because the Attorney General won't defend the constitutionality of the statute. The remedy is to put another initiative on the ballot and let the people have the say. And if the polls really have moved, then California can change its policy judgment about the importance of traditional marriage. But don't have it imposed on them by some single federal court judge, which is what we have right now.
And finally, John Eastman, what do you think this says about the Supreme Court? Did you learn anything new about this court today?
Well, no, the court, just as they did last year in a couple of very important cases, continues to try and duck the substantive issues that it's their job to decide. I think they're very confused about the meaning of federalism. And I think they have repudiated the California Supreme Court's own definitive ruling that proponents of initiative under California law represent the interests of the state when they're arguing in federal court. And that should have been dispositive. And for the court simultaneously to say the states get to decide this question, and then in the Proposition 8 case, we'll say, but if the state elected officials are counter to the people, we're gonna not uphold the right of the people to defend their own initiative, that really, I think, undermines democracy. And I think the court is going to rue the day that it issued that decision.
All right, John Eastman, professor at Chapman University School of Law and chair of the National Organization for Marriage, which supports Prop 8. Thanks for joining.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to you, David Levine, law professor at UC Hastings, and Jane Schachter, law professor at Stanford Law School. We were joined earlier also by Kate Kendall, executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. We will continue to follow these decisions on KQED and on KQED.org. The decisions are both posted on Forum's website, and you can continue your discussion there. Thank you, everyone, for being part of the program. I'm Judy Campbell in today for Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.